listening to the podcast have been injected with mRNA. What is it? Well, that's why many are reluctant to get the vaccine. They don't even know what mRNA is. Do you? Today, we learn more about mRNA. Thanks for listening and subscribing to Learning More, where each episode we bring you a new story about people, inventions, pop culture, and life. I'm your host, I'm Russ, and this week, we're discussing mRNA. Now, we're familiar with DNA, but with the vaccines for COVID-19, we've become familiar with a new term, mRNA. Let's learn more today about mRNA from Penny Riggs. She is Associate Professor of Functional Genomics and Associate Vice President for Research at Texas A&M University. Penny, let's start at the beginning here. What is mRNA?
Well, mRNA is messenger RNA, and it's the next step. You know, I think people have probably heard about DNA. We talk about that a lot. DNA has to get translated into something. And so the way that that happens, the way that the DNA has a function, is that a process where we say it gets translated into a messenger RNA. And that just means that part of the DNA gets copied, and then it gets kicked out of the nucleus, gets kicked out of the center part of the cell and out into the cytoplasm of the cell where proteins get made. And those are the products of the genes that are in our DNA. So that's what it is in a nutshell.
You know, back in the 90s, it was the OJ trial where everybody talked about DNA, and like that became like, is DNA evidence and all this crazy stuff. And then all of a sudden, everybody was chatting about DNA.
Yeah, you're exactly right. The OJ trial, suddenly everybody knew what DNA was and DNA evidence. Right. It was incredible. And I really, I think of it the same way, that now mRNA, because of these new vaccines, is going to be known the same way. But it's a little more complicated to understand because it seems so mysterious.
Well, and that was the thing, you know, with DNA, I remember, you know, the lawyers were even fighting, oh, no, DNA, it doesn't prove anything. You know, like that was, you know, part of the case made. I know I'm really summarizing that part of the case, but people didn't really trust the science back then. And so and now it sort of feels in some ways people don't trust this science as well because they feel like it's new perhaps, or, you know, they just don't know enough about it.
Well, it's unknown. And DNA is really stable. And now we have, I don't know, how long has that been? 20 years, 25 years that we've been talking about DNA. Suddenly mRNA is on the scene. What is this? Why would I put it in my body? Is it some crazy experimental thing? But no, this is how the cell works. It's a really tightly regulated molecule, so it doesn't stick around very long. It gets degraded in our bodies. You make as much as you need and then turn it off. And if that process gets messed up, then we have other problems. But that's why it's harder to understand, because you have this transient molecule that's, it's there for a little while and then it goes away. And what is it doing and where is it going?
Right. So, well, okay. So the mRNA doesn't stay in your body for life. Since it sort of self-destructs, does that mean that also protection from the vaccine, is that going to just go away as the mRNA goes away?
So that's a little bit, one, we don't know for sure how long the protection will last that we get from having the vaccine, but it's sort of a complicated process. The scientists who made the vaccines finally figured out a way to get the mRNA into a cell so it could stay long enough to not get destroyed. But then that mRNA gets turned into a protein that looks a little bit, or it is a portion of the protein that's in the virus. And so then the cells of our immune system can recognize that little part of the protein, and then they make other molecules that give us the immunity that protects us from the virus. So the messenger RNA really has an intermediate step. And how long it lasts, it does affect our immune system a little bit, because you have to keep the RNA long enough around long enough that you make enough protein that then your immune system could respond to it. So from that standpoint, yes, it's a little bit related.
And that, I guess, kind of shows like in the side effects that many people experience after the second shot. Some people experience them after the first shot. Many people after the second dose have had several side effects, like, you know, tiredness, headache, chills. I had a headache that lasted like 6 days, a little minor headache, yeah. But you know, it was like, it was there. I knew that something was different. I was still able to do everything and all of that. But is that from the mRNA kind of staying in the body and that's our cells learning at that point?
It's from the immune system responding and fighting against this foreign invader that will give us immunity. So you recognize the mRNA in the vaccine encodes, or so it's got the instructions for how to make this part of the virus called a spike protein. And that's a very unique shape that is part of the active part of how the virus does its thing and making us sick. So by just giving us a little bit of this protein, then our immune cells, our killer T cells recognize this bit of protein. And then the next time they see it, they would go fight against it. But that whole process of being exposed to it gives us a little bit of a mini illness, you know, so headache, fever, all of that. But once you quit making proteins, then it's gone. You know, you've made your response and the rest of it is gone from your system and you feel better.
So typically we take something like a viral vector vaccine where like a modified version of another virus, and that's been around since like what, the 1800 or so. Was it Edward Jenner with the smallpox, cowpox? Okay, I'm sorry, I'm not going to give a history lesson. That's my other podcast. But
no, you're doing great. You're doing great.
There's still not trust around even like that kind of vaccine. You know, how do we make people feel comfortable, or what's, you know, your take on that, making people feel more comfortable about taking this new kind of vaccine when maybe they weren't even comfortable with the vaccines that have been around since 1800?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, things that we don't understand are always scary. The vaccine, talking about good old Edward Jenner, the first way to do it was you take a virus and you heat it up and kill it, but it still has viral particles and inject that. And that was our first step toward how do we find a way that we can teach our immune system to fend off the bad guys, to fend off the invaders. And so we did that. Those were called modified live viruses. And then we had other ways of making viruses where you could just take part of a virus that had been inactivated to make it harmless. So it had the properties of a virus, but it wasn't very functional, but it could only function just enough so our bodies could recognize the virus that we really wanted to kill. And that's the more traditional virus, the more traditional vaccine, rather. In fact, the Johnson & Johnson vaccine that's out now that also works really well is that sort of traditional vaccine. But these new messenger RNA vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, they use even less. So all they use is just some instructions for how you make just that one little spike protein part of the coronavirus. And it's kind of what's the minimum that we can show to our body so that they can build some immunity against and protect us from this ugly virus.
So the mRNA, which here in the States is the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, they don't actually contain the actual virus. So we're not even putting the virus in our body.
No, we're not. It's really amazing. The ingredient list is on the, you can find it on the internet, and it's got water, a little bit of sugar, some messenger RNA molecules, and then it uses lipid nanoparticles to carry the messenger RNA in. Maybe there's some salt buffer in there too. And that's about it. And then once those mRNA molecules make it into the cytoplasm, into the outer part of our cells, then some other molecules called ribosomes, the translation machinery get in there and make a little bit of spike protein, and that's what our bodies recognize. So in terms of, you know, from a scientist perspective, it's really exciting and neat because this is a whole new technology that we haven't ever been able to use before. But it's so precise and so elegant and so simple. From my perspective, I think, wow, this is a step toward something that's really safe and probably the safest, most exciting vaccines we've ever had.
We'll take a short break here, but that's exactly where I wanted to go with this. It's kind of what the future of mRNA. What else can we use this for? And also, we'll touch on the safety. And I know, you know, there's kids out there now getting this, and we'll talk about the safety with kids and the vaccines as well. We'll do that right after this. All right, and welcome back to Learning More. I'm Russ, and I'm talking with Penny Riggs about mRNA. And you know the term now, you're hearing it on all the news networks, right? Pretty much everywhere you go at this point because of the vaccines. And the science behind this is just amazing. And that's actually where I want to kind of start now, is the science of this. A lot of the estimates, I remember, you know, once lockdown started, it was, oh, it's going to be potentially years before we get a vaccine. It's going to take forever. We've got to go through trials and all of this. Then all of a sudden, December rolls around and we've got an announcement of a vaccine. How did this happen so quickly?
It was really amazing. And it seems like it happened overnight, but it was one of those things where you had about two decades worth of science leading up to it. And then the infusion of a lot of scientists trying everything they could to figure out how can we make a vaccine to solve this virus problem, and the funds to do it as well. You know, it takes cash. There were early in the 1990s, there was the idea that you could use mRNA to treat diseases or to make a vaccine. There was a scientist, Kate Carrico and Drew Weissman, some other names that are around, and they thought they could do this, but it had gotten close, you know, stepwise. Do the first step of the experiment, figure out how do you get RNA into a cell without it being destroyed? How do you turn it into a vaccine? And you have to have a carrier. You have to have something to carry it in. And one of the things that had been the holdup was how to use some sort of molecule, something, to get that messenger RNA into a cell without making people sick. So you didn't react to the ingredients in the vaccine. And finally, it's all proprietary, so I don't know the details of it, but these lipid nanoparticles have just the right amount of lipid, or a type of fat, and a nanoparticle, these really small small particles that carry the mRNA into the cell nucleus without the body just reacting to the carrier coming in. And so that step got overturned. Somebody figured out how to do it. And then it got tested in volunteers. So that's the thing. This came about really fast, and we have a long process where a company has to submit data and trials to the FDA before it becomes a fully approved, authorized drug. So it started out first. There were 30,000 volunteers around the U.S. Signed up, and then the response to the vaccine treatment went really, really well. It was super successful. Not big health problems, you know, some side effects, but not major ones. And then more people did it. Then there was emergency use authorization. And now there have been millions of people vaccinated. The safety record compared to other kinds of drugs is just phenomenal. So it's working. And it's a really exciting time of science in action, I think.
Yeah, well, that was the cool part about it, you know. And I feel like we're living through yet another one of these really cool science times in life. You know, I mean, like even the space race that we're going through again, like all of these different things that we get to see and view. And I feel like you know, one of the positives to come out of this whole COVID situation, I think, is this, you know, breakthrough in using this as a vaccine. But, you know, when we talk about speed of this and, you know, we've mentioned safety a few times, let's talk about the safety of this, because, yeah, it feels like it's been characterized as something that skipped a few steps to get put out there. And that's what some people might think. But let's talk about the safety of it and, you know, the process this went through. Did it skip steps? Is this something that we should be nervous about?
It did not skip steps. The only thing that got skipped is that you had an emergency use authorization. So you didn't have the period of time. You know, we didn't wait a year to a year and a half to look at all the data. The data got looked at when 10,000 people had received the vaccine. There was data about all 10,000. When 100,000 had received either of the vaccines, FDA looked at that and moved forward. And so we're following all the same steps. And in fact, recently, Pfizer has started to begin the process for full approval, because now they do have enough time and enough data that they could go to full approval. But so people might say, well, but still it's fast. And how do you know that it's safe? And there's still a lot more to it. Can I say without a doubt that it's got completely long-term safe effects? I can't. We haven't had any time. And, you know, as a scientist, we don't show me the data, show me the evidence. So we have to collect data over time. But it's trying to prove a negative is nearly impossible for a scientist, because you can always think of, well, maybe.
Right.
But we have all these. We have now 2 million data points of people who successfully were vaccinated and didn't suffer any harm, other than, you know, they're a little fever for a couple of days or a headache or something like that, and who are now protected from the virus.
Yeah, exactly. And we do have some of the data as far as the long term issues, you know, with COVID. There's respiratory issues, possible heart issues. There's a lot of issues with actually getting the virus itself. And it seems like when you weigh the two options, this seems like something that people should do, because the other side of it, the COVID situation, does not seem like a good thing.
Yeah, that's the thing about this COVID virus, is that you might be the person who has no symptoms, but you might be the person that has something really bad happen to you. And there's no exactly way to know which one you are. So for me, mm-hmm, I had to make a decision. Do I want to gamble on being somebody who would have no effects from the virus? Or do I want to get a vaccine that I know a lot about how it works? And for me, it's easy. I'm like, I'm taking the vaccine.
The
what we know about the vaccine is that they solved the problem with how do you get the messenger RNA into your cell. The other thing that we know about mRNA is that it gets degraded. Some mRNAs are gone in 5 minutes. The ones that hang around for a long time might hang around for a day, but that's a really, really, really long time in mRNA time. So I know that this vaccine in a day is going to be mostly gone. And in a few days, it's going to be totally gone from my system completely. So, you know, you don't have to worry about it hanging around for a long time. And that's the exciting part about why would you want to use this? It's really neat from...
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, now the struggle is, because it just opened up for 12 plus, you know, a couple of weeks ago, the parents, you know, perhaps are okay. They look at the same thing. Well, there's been a small sample size to this point. And is it safe for my kids to take? And it's funny, you know, like me making the decision for myself, it's like, okay, I'm making that decision myself for me, so I feel okay about it. But then, you know, as a parent, when you're making that decision, it could be a little more difficult, because it's not the decision for yourself, it's for your child. So it can be a little more difficult to make that decision, I guess. Is there any special concerns with this particular type of vaccine for kids?
For me, I can't think of any. It's the there doesn't seem to be any special risk. It's the mechanism is so simple that there's not anything different about a child than an adult, other than, you know, children are growing, so, you know, more of their cells may be dividing or something, but it doesn't have any bearing on the vaccine. Messenger RNA is messenger RNA. It goes into your cells, it gets destroyed, and we're done. But this is part of our process. First, the vaccine was tested in adults from 21 to 90 or some age range like that of adult volunteers. And then it was expanded out to people who had conditions that made them more likely that they would be at greater risk for COVID. Then it was expanded to anybody over 18. And then it was tested. There was a subset of volunteers who were pregnant women, and it was tested in that data set. Did any pregnant women have any adverse effects from getting the vaccine? That data came back beautifully. So then the next step was, okay, let's look at 12 to 18 year olds. And one of the things that's neat is all this data is being collected, and you could even, you know, there's an app that sends me an email every week. Now it's time for your weekly check-in. Did you have any symptoms or any problems that you attribute to this vaccine? So all this data is being collected and looked at. So it seems like these are some of the best tested or most visibly tested vaccines that we have. You know, if you send your kid to college this year, they're required to have a meningitis vaccine in order to enter the college where I work. So what do you know about that vaccine?
Right. Well, I feel like, yeah, the whole world was focused on this. So for me, that adds to the safety of this. I love that so many scientists in so many places
were working on this. It's scrutinized, and, you know, the scientists are just totally being geeks about this of, isn't this so cool? You know, how this is working. Somebody figured this out. It's a huge breakthrough. We'll be talking Nobel Prizes, I'm sure. Somewhere down the road soon.
Okay. So with that, we've got something breakthrough here. We've got something different. What do we see as future use cases for mRNA?
I think this will be used for other types of vaccines, because it can be tailored so easily. The downside of these is that they're expensive. It's very costly to scale up the production to the level needed. And we don't know yet, will only certain types of viruses, will this work for certain types of viruses? Will it work for any virus? Could we go target cancer cells this way? And there's some evidence that can happen. Will these get used for animal vaccines as well? Can they get the cost down enough to make them viable for that? I think we'll see more and more of this in different kinds of applications, and then we'll find out what are the limitations and types of use. But I think it's really exciting. Probably you could see it. Maybe it will become the wave of the future for the annual flu vaccines or something like that.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking that as well. And then, you know, my mind also kind of went to, like, you know, Parkinson's and dementia. They're trying to understand more about, you know, those. It almost feels like this could be used in, you know, perhaps those diseases that impact the older population in the,
yeah. Anywhere where you want to try to turn something off, if you're making too much protein or too little protein, your cells are dividing and growing when they shouldn't be, causing a tumor. Those types of applications, I will not be surprised at all. It's people will be excited, and they'll try to see how can we tackle this. And it should give a very precise tool. So far, we're these two vaccines are the first step in success. But I'm sure we'll see more.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I feel like, you know, what this science has done is it's taken the lemons and, you know, really the scientists have made lemonade out of this. They've made something that is really promising that could help us in the future in so many different ways. All right. So maybe there's some people that were listening to this podcast. Maybe we turned them around. Maybe, you know, now they were on the fence on whether to get this or not. What can we say to them now to kind of push them over the fence to make them go get the vaccine if they haven't done so already?
Well, from my perspective, I think this is one of the safest vaccines we've ever had. But you still have to, you know, you still have to make up your own mind. I think getting these vaccines and getting this virus stopped in its tracks is the most important thing so we can all get back to our lives. And I think they're really safe. I really hate being told what to do or what I should do. But I think these vaccines are pretty cool and exciting, bold step for science. So, you know, there you have it. Yeah. I got my vaccine.
Right. Well, you know, I think, and again, you know, I'm with you. The thing that would concern people is probably the science, is probably, you know, these things that where it's like, oh, I don't know if I trust it. Hopefully with this interview, we've helped to build some of that trust so that you can make your decision. And I did feel like, and I don't know if you felt like this when you got yours, but I felt like I had an extra little superpower. It's like I felt so much better, you know, going to the store or doing, you know, some normal stuff. That's and nice. I felt okay about it.
And you're also part of history for sure. Yeah, it is scary. It's this crazy science that you don't understand, and it's being in your face. I understand that, but I think it is possible to go learn more about it. It really builds on a lot of history and a lot of science that was very well known, that scientists were very comfortable with, and we just had to get over that one hump of how do you deliver it in a safe, ineffective manner. And that got solved, figuring out just the right particle to carry that mRNA into the cell. So for me, it's one of the least scary medical things I've ever, you know, experienced. So I think they're very safe. It seems that all the data is holding up that they're very safe and very effective. And, you know, that's my decision.
Right. Well, you know, I think I feel like a lot of people will, you know, whatever, like drink one of those energy drinks or, you know, smoke a cigarette. But then they're like, no, I don't want to do this. Put something crazy in my body. Well, sadly, we all do already.
Yes. So, yeah. So I think these are a neat breakthrough. We're going to be seeing more of them. And I know that there are hundreds of thousands of people out there now that have been vaccinated. So, and that's helping us get the restaurants open and get all of our restaurant workers and musicians and all those folks back to work.
I can't wait to see live music again. That's going to be so great. Hey, you know, we've got an article linked in the description that Penny wrote if you want to get additional information about mRNA. Penny, thank you so much for joining us today.
So I appreciate it. It was fun to be a guest, and I hope people will learn more about the mRNA and what it is, so maybe eliminate some of that fear.
And we continue our podcast next week. We are talking about happiness. At what age are you the happiest? Statistically, you know, we're going to find that out next episode of Learning More. That will be coming out next week. We've got some additional great shows lined up, so be sure to hit that subscribe button. And we would love reviews, especially those 5-star ones, if you feel like we've earned it here on Learning More. You can also check out our daily podcast called This Is Today to stay up to date on whatever national event it is, historical items, all of that is available on This Is Today. There's a link to that in the description as well. I hope you enjoyed learning about mRNA. I'm Russ, and I'll talk to you next time.